Can you remove these strings? Give me the cable. All right, sorry about that. We've got some technical issues. Also, there's some construction going on in the building nearby. So in case you can't hear us, please put a note down in the comment section. This is not working. All right, sorry about that. Give us 1 second. In updates that we've had since the last time, I'm just going to cover 3 very quick updates that matter. One is on the welding equipment front, we continue to extend the range of Make in India products that we are manufacturing and looking to take on more and more imports. This is actually a brand new welding equipment that's been in development for the last 4 or 5 months that actually feeds into a slightly lower value range. And we've just launched this product, and touch wood, we have been seeing very good demand for it already. The second thing that is important is in approximately July of, I'd spoken about this earlier, but in July of this year, we finally opened up our new office in Jebel Ali Free Trade Zone. As we said, the export market provides tremendous potential going forward. And we've not only strengthened the team, but also the infrastructure, and also opening up new markets. So while this data would normally be seen in the annual report, we thought we'd share it over here with regard to the trajectory we see with Addo International sales and as they move forward. Very quickly, this is the infrastructure that we have set up in Jebel Ali. Lastly, we also won a very large order for our flares and process equipment division, 145 crores including GST, and a timeline execution of 30 months. I know there'll be many questions regarding this, and we are happy to take those as we go along. So these are the 3 critical announcements, also things that we have been working on internally since the last time we spoke. I think most of this data is fairly self-explanatory with regard to return on capital employed, PBT margins. All of that is already with everyone. We track this obviously very regularly and what is happening and where the concern areas are. As we see the market start to grow, as we see the flares and process equipment also divisions start to pick up a little bit, our borrowing will pick up slightly going forward, which is why you are seeing that start to happen in Q2 onwards. What was a concern definitely all the way from December till July, August, was just the volatility of steel prices, definitely an impact. I'm sure you know about that better than us. Geopolitical issues, interest rates, all that sort of stuff that's very typical in that regard. We have been focusing a lot on strengthening our supply chain management and continuous investments in technology upgradation. In fact, there's a new product line that we're also working on at the moment, which will undertake some capex in the coming months. Strengthening the distribution and online sales is always important. As mentioned earlier, we're working with various online channels because we see that as a tremendous opportunity going ahead. I spoke on Addo International. And lastly, demand stabilization since August or September based on the price volatility has been fairly good. And it seems to be indicating a fairly decent path going forward, August, September, October data. Most of you would know this, but we put it in here just so you can understand the volatility we've had to deal with since January. The left-hand side talks about the steel price issue indexed to 100 starting from January onwards. And if you look at the drop that we had all the way from April until July, and the way it was moving as well as the availability of material, that left us with the inventory overhang that we did end up having into July, into the July month. Certain other raw materials, we're not going to get into the details of those, but are very critical, especially in the welding consumable space. I have not yet come off their highs, and that's why we've been sharing that, as we thought we'd share that data with you as well. Segment performance, you've seen it in the results. I think the primary concern here is if you look at the bottom right chart, the results as a percentage of revenue. As we said in Q1, it spiked a bit more than we expected. Again, appreciation in prices at that time and then the drop. So that's why that's happened in Q1. If you look at the equipment, as the volumes start to pick up, you will see this start to get a lot better going forward from Q2 FY23 onwards. And that seems to be better placed at the moment as well. Pleasant process equipment division, a lot of cleanup has happened. I think a lot of people know about this. They've asked a lot of questions over time. What are the changes we've made? We had a target of 75 crores. Orders in hand is 134 crores. That takes the Uran order at the net value of 120 crores. Plus, we've added another 20, 25 crores of orders, and we've obviously executed some through the year as well. I think more 30 crores of orders we have taken on this year in addition to that. So we're getting into a much stronger position. The results as a percentage of revenue did badly in Q2 because top line was not so great. But like any other project-oriented business, this pushes itself more towards Q3 and eventually Q4 a little bit more. CapEx, I know there are a lot of questions on CapEx, so I thought we'd just quickly update over here to the welding business. We have so far this year altogether incurred approximately 5.5 crores, and we have planned another 17.5 crores of CapEx. Of that, approximately 12.5 is fully or 10 crores of the balance is related to the welding business, which has got to do with a new production line also, which captures about 70%-80% of that, which is a very critical production line for us, and we should be having that commissioned within the next 6-8 months, 6-7 months. And the flares and process equipment division, this is based on simple equipments and things like that that are required based on Uhlan and plus the new direction the team is working in. So that's where we come up with this entire CapEx plan that we have for this year. There are questions on the merger. The NOC for the proposed scheme of amalgamation with Adore Fontech has been received from the stock exchanges, and we are in the process of filing the application with the NCLT. Hopefully, as you are seeing, there are certain delays that happen over there, but we're quite hopeful that it'll get passed quite soon. I am now going to leave it open to question and answers. Pooja, you're running it. And these are the guidelines. We request everyone to keep it two, three questions, not to repeat the same question. We will try and answer as the best possible, and if there's something left over, we'll try and get to that as well. And by 6:00, we request, I think that should be plenty of time to try and finish most of this off. All right, thank you, guys. I'm going to now stop sharing this. You have to do this. Put it on that mouse pad and do it. It's not working. Just stop sharing it and do it. All right, so go ahead. Start.
Question and answer session. I request everyone to insert your name in the chat box if you wish to ask the question. The first question is from Mr. Rahul Jain. Mr. Jain, you can go ahead, please.
Am I audible?
Yeah, you're audible. Go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation, Ankit. So we've done exceptionally well on the sales side with regards to this quarter, about 15%-16% growth on the sales. But on the margins, I mean, you did allude to probably the raw material cost, the steel cost volatility, which could have affected our gross margins. So our gross margins are again below 30%. And more so on the consumable side, our EBIT margins are again around 8%. Sorry. I'm so sorry about this.
No, no, it's fine.
Yeah. So typically, Aditya, if not for the steel volatility on a normal state of the normal environment, what margins do we envisage? We have been talking about step-by-step improvement in margins for the last more than 18 months now. And yes, there was some improvement in one or two quarters, but again, this quarter, it has gone down. Of course, it would not be a right thing on my part to look at margins in terms of quarterly basis. But on a steady state of affairs, where do we see our margins? More so on the consumable side. I'm sorry, did I mention 8%? It is 11%. 8% is the overall company margins. So how do we see these margins going ahead? What kind of improvements can we see over the next two, four quarters to come? That is my question number one on the margin. On the CapEx side, you have mentioned in the AGM as well as the previous year, sorry, in the previous call, analyst call in June, two parts of the CapEx was one was the normal maintenance CapEx, which you have already given details about in your presentation. And there was this large rejig manufacturing CapEx, which you had planned and you had mentioned in the earlier call that you would share probably something more in this particular call. So if you could share some more details on the large CapEx, which we are talking about in next 3 years to come, next two, three years to come. And lastly, on the equipment division, sir, how do we see equipment division going ahead in terms of the growth path and the margins also? We have spoken earlier that equipment can be in the region of 12%-15%. So if you could share some thoughts on the equipment side. This is from my side. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Jain. So I'll attempt to answer your questions first so that we avoid any repetition. Okay, let's answer one by one. I'm not going to get into the volatility part. You also addressed that. You understand that's the part that happens. As a philosophy, as a company, as a team, we think that our margins are anywhere between, and the consumers front, anywhere between 100 to 150 to 200 basis points below where they should be at the very minimum. And like I keep saying, that's going to be a step-by-step progression, and you will see that progression happen apart from any significant activities like we've seen in the last 8 months. You should see that progression happening. It's a mix, product mix, pushing better value, and as well as the markets we're selling to. So it's a combination of those three things we work at all the time, and you will see that. That's our target, and we believe it's definitely achievable in the next 2 to 4 quarters. As far as CapEx goes, as you said, I showed the normal CapEx. The rejig takes into consideration the approval for the merger. So while I am working on things that I can't disclose, so to say, I have to wait for this merger approval to come before I can disclose them entirely. And also, it's a lot of work in progress. A lot of different things that we're exploring. How does the realignment happen? Which is the right locations to be in? The product mix accordingly. It's still some time away. It's not going to happen very soon. I need to wait for the merger to get approved, start the integration process, and then we'll do it. So I think it's looking more like a 3 to 4 year plan. And like I keep saying, when you rejig, at least the philosophy we follow as a group, when you rejig, you will realign properties and stuff like that accordingly. You know, so I'm not going to take on some massive capex bet that's going to have that's going to have a lot of debt on it as well. So that rejig will happen accordingly. On the equipment division, it's a question of volumes and product mix. And we are seeing that pick up. The CapEx cycle, of course, is the first given, which is touch wood, doing quite okay now. And we're seeing Q3, Q4, very good indicators of demand, as well as certain orders closing, some in the pipeline. Again, another 100 to 150 basis points at least, on the equipment division is what we've been talking about and pushing very hard to get to. It's a question of scalability. I think we should get there. And we are working very, very hard. In fact, it should be more than that, if you ask me. On a CapEx cycle, we can probably push up 200 basis points plus at least on the next for this part. So that's what we're looking at from that angle. And the growth seems to be intact from what we're seeing from the CapEx demand perspective. I hope that answers your questions as best possible.
Thank you so much. So, but on the equipment for the next year, can we see somewhere around a 150 crores kind of top line?
I hate giving forecasts, guys. I'm sorry. I can't give you guys forecasts. I don't give forecasts, and it's simply because there's so many variables in place. But that's slightly above my internal numbers. It's close to that. It's close to that, but definitely feasible. But slightly above my internal numbers. Let's put it that way.
Okay. If I could just squeeze in one about the demand scenario. Is the demand looking overall? In terms of various sectors?
General infrastructure, very good demand. Certain key sectors, railways, heavy core sectors, defense volumes are okay, but railways and you know, all of those sort of power, all of that okay, auto, all right. But in general demand, general infra is actually for us a very good play, and oil and gas is also sort of there. So I like those kind of plays. It helps us work a lot, gives us a good product mix as well. So I'm quite happy with that so far. Whatever we're seeing, it's fairly decent. We're seeing a lot of fruition happening in that demand.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, and wish you all the best.
Thank you. All the best. Thanks. Sorry, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Jain. The next question is from Mr. Naitik. Mr. Naitik, please proceed.
Go to the next, come back otherwise. Come back to us.
The next question is from Mr. Ankit Gupta. Mr. Gupta, you are now being placed in the meeting. Please proceed.
Thanks for the opportunity. And Aditya, if you can talk about how has been the volume growth during Q2 and Q1, and how much has been the inventory loss in Q2 because of reduction in prices of steel?
Um, For the half year, in terms of welding equipment numbers, and remember, numbers is not the best indicator on volume of equipment, because you have a mix of equipment from very tiny ones to large ones. But anyway, I'll give you the data. We are at approximately 366 versus 2747. So approximately anywhere in the region of 15% to 18% volume growth on equipment. So there's a product mix thing in there that you should always try and decipher a little bit. But definitely seems to be robust, that we do see 15 to 18% is definitely very encouraging. On the electrode and the wires and fluxes and all of that, what we call the consumables altogether, Q1, as far as volumes go, because of the charts you've seen, were obviously a little soft. In general, we're approximately on par almost with last year, HY1, with a healthier product mix this year. I think both those, that pie will grow a little bit, such that even the more commoditized range will grow going into HY2. I hope that answers your question.
So basically what you're saying is, like, we have largely been flat on the volume side, but there has been some product mix change which has been favorable for us.
Yeah, especially on the HY1 front. If you look at the Q2 front, it's been a little bit soft in terms of certain product lines, but some product lines have also done well. But I expect both those product lines, I expect a bit of a change to happen over the next coming quarters. Correct.
So you're saying you expect some volume growth during H2?
Definitely. Sure. Definitely.
An inventory loss for Q2, if you have that figure or, you know, ballpark number?
Look, I don't have a ballpark number for your inventory loss. I'll tell you what we did. We took a strategic decision to push through material rather than sit on it, because at that time, come 1st July, we did not know what was happening in prices. All we knew is it was coming down, and we had no idea at that time if it's going to remain down, go back up, what's going to happen. And I don't believe in doing inventory plays, especially in a company of our size. So I was very clean. I was very clear. The team was also very clear that let's push through that inventory. So I think we gave up quite a lot of margin in July. That's the only way I'd like to put it. We gave up quite a lot of margin in July to get the throughput of inventory out. And we don't have an inventory loss. We got the inventory through. And then in August and September, we were rotating with new inventory at the right prices and the right market demand as well. So that way is how we did it.
Sure. And my second question is on, our ambition of reaching mid-teens kind of margins on the equipment side. So, last few quarters, we have been badly hit by the imported raw materials that we have because of, higher prices and, some issues on the freight front. So when do you see this situation easing for us? You have talked about, quarter on quarter improvement going forward. But when do you see ourselves reaching our ambition of mid-teens kind of margins on the equipment side?
I think it should come around quite quickly. Supply chains are easing. Demand is picking up quite fast. I mean, supply chain issues are still there, but nowhere near as bad as they were in the earlier part of the year. I think you should see that progression happen quite quickly. Sometime in the next early part of next calendar year or middle part of next calendar year, we should see that definitely.
Sure. And on the consumable side, our ambitions are also on the higher end of the margins. And currently, last quarter was impacted, but with demand stabilizing and price, with demand improving and prices stabilizing, do you think, over next few quarters, we'll be able to reach to higher EBITDA margins?
Definitely. That's definitely the plan. And the only thing I can't take into consideration is, like I said, I could not see, at least none of us could see what happened in the first 6 months of this year as something that you could expect to happen. So if it remains as is and economic and macro conditions remain the way they are, definitely.
Sure. Thank you so much and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Mr. Jason. Please proceed.
Yeah, hello, sir. Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
Am I audible?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. So thank you so much for taking my question. My first question is, continuing from the earlier participant, so the margins have been hit in Q2 for our primary segment, which stood at 11.1%. You already mentioned what's the reason for that. So just wanted to know if the margins can come back to that a healthy trajectory of 15%. Going ahead for 2H, can we expect that with a, you know, with a lot of, with the capex theme already roaring and it's fairly decent uptick as you mentioned. So do you see it going back to those 15% levels as we saw in Q1?
Sorry, give me 1 second. I'm just studying the numbers to make sure I don't I'm incorrect. I think we can definitely come awfully close to it. Let's put it that way. We can definitely come awfully close to it, but it takes a little bit of, you know, once you've dipped down, it's not like it's going to happen tomorrow morning, but I think we definitely internally are working towards ensure that happens. I think we're working towards it. It should get better, definitely.
Okay. Very close. Okay. Very close. Okay. So I'm just in our discussion, I just wanted to understand. So, of course, welding is a very technical industry as such, and we as financial investors always want to know more and more about the subject. So I just wanted to understand that when you talk about in consumables, you spoke about the volume growth was a little bit okay, but the product mix improved. So I just wanted to know if you can get into, in terms of consumables, what will form a high proportion of a better product mix? Like what is a high margin product versus a okay, a commoditized product? You know, can you throw some color on it? Like, what can be a better margin product or a better product mix, a better margin yielding product rather than a commoditized product? If you can give some color on the consumable side as well and as the equipment side also, if possible.
I'll try and give you from a very layman's perspective because I'm not a technical person either, but I'll try and give you from a layman's perspective of our understanding. So, one is the base steel metal that you're going to use, or the base steel that is in use. So, whether you're going to use simple Meyer steel or carbon steel, or whether that sort of strength qualities and everything like that of the steel change, that of course matters. So it depends on what industry is welding what, that's going to have an impact on that. So that's one part of the value mix in terms of different types of steels. The second part that's very critical is which industry you're working with. So if you're working with, for example, the auto industry, where the automation factor and the high volume growth factor, the high volume production factor that is taking place requires processes to be in place accordingly. That also plays a role. And it's a more commoditized sort of product range that you play in there. Whereas if you go into oil and gas, and if you go into, for example, a pipeline, or you go into something that is high pressure steels, or you go into something nuclear related, obviously, accordingly, not only does the steel industry, but also ancillary or complementary industries like us see the benefit of a higher value product going in over there. So it follows that kind of trajectory. As far as the equipment goes, it's to do with sometimes the quality of the weld and what sort of quality output you're expecting on the weld, as well as the place in which you're welding. So the highest value addition products that we would sell would be, for example, when you're doing cross-country pipelines where there's no power. So the type of product that you're selling in over there is obviously with a generator, high quality of weld, all of those kind of things. Whereas if you come all the way down to what your grill welder on the road is doing, and while he's welding your small jalis or whatever it is, it's a very different type of weld and sort of more just the need for a tack weld to take place. So the range is quite drastic on that front, and that's where it comes to. I hope that helps in some way.
Okay, sure, sir. And just one question, final question from my side. You did mention in the earlier con call that, you know, compared to ESAB, you know, 80 to 90% of your portfolio overlaps, so there's a gap of 20 to 20%. And you're looking at narrowing this gap. Of course, it will happen in a gradual and a phased manner. So just wanted to know, you know, how are those efforts going on? You spoke about, you know, putting in better quality of materials, launching higher efficiency products. And you also spoke about liaising with a technological partner if need be. So just wanted to know what's the progress on that front, and in this capex which you mentioned, is there anything relating to this aspect as well?
There's a little bit of it happening in this capex as well. We are ongoing on that. That's a continuous evolution of the industry. And look, at the end of the day, I don't comment on our competitors, but they are globally ahead of the curve compared to us. So there's always a catch-up element that we have to work on, and we are continuously doing that. However, and it is on a product sale basis, I firmly believe it's not that different. It's an 80-90% similar. However, you should keep in mind, if you read their balance sheet, you will see that they also have a very large service component, which is part of their knowledge process offshoring that goes on, I think, in their group. I don't know, but that's what I understand from the balance sheet. So that part is not replicable. And that obviously has its own structures and stuff like that. So I won't comment on them. But I will tell you, as far as products go, it should be 80-90%, and we can keep on bridging that gap, and we are slowly. But that variation will remain as far as the services part goes.
Okay, so, and just one final question, if I can squeeze in. You did allude to, you did mention that demand in terms of defense, railways, general infra is fairly decent at a good clip, at this point in time. But, when you talk about India, there is a lot of talk about a strong capex cycle going through the, going through the roof. For the next 3 to 4 years, there is the elections as well, going ahead. So there's a strong run-up for capex, which we see here now. So just wanted to know from a 2-3 perspective, as for Adore Welding being the second largest player in the welding consumable space of the welding industry, and you predominantly cater to domestic demand. So how do you see the demand trajectory from a 2-3 year perspective on the ground? How do you feel the spanning out for Adore?
Very robust. Definitely say it's very, very robust. So look, if you ask me fundamentally, and we discuss this all the time, fundamentally on the ground, things are great. It's moving in the right path. Things are okay. We are laying out our entire plans based on exactly the cycle you are talking of. My only concern comes in the last 2-3 years, given the sort of changes that have happened on a macro level, whether it's COVID, whether it's some war, whether it's the volatility of markets, supply chains being hit, volatility in commodities, it's very hard to predict that you're going to have stability through the course of this time, globally or globally, more than domestically, I'd say. But if you ask me, I'm with you that's the way we are planning is completely along those lines.
Sure. Thank you so much for taking my questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker for the day is Mr. Viraj Mehta. Mr. Mehta, you are now being placed in the meeting. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. Aditya, my first question is regarding the volatility in margins. If I see, and of course there is only just one listed peer for us to compare, so pardon me for doing that, but the kind of volatility I saw in margins of both welding and Pontech doesn't match up both this quarter and earlier quarter compared to ESAB. What would you allure it to?
I think you're right. And
also the growth was higher, so they grew 20% plus.
Yeah. So look, there are two elements here. As I said, I don't like to compare and or talk about their business. I can only talk about what I read from their annual report, which shows a host of service income. Like I said, I'm not going to keep going back into it, but I don't know what that plays out on a quarterly basis. I don't know what that is on a quarterly basis. I don't have that data. So that's one, but I'm not getting into it. I think, if you ask me, I think they're smarter at managing their long-term rate contracts, passing through of prices. I think their dependability on the end-use customer is better with that than it is with us. I think our reliance on the distribution market is higher, which causes us to have more variation. So I feel that is where the concern is, and we keep working on stabilizing this a little bit more. I think they have probably some global best practices in terms of their tie-ups with the end-use customers, maybe that has better price variation clauses and stuff like that. So it's part of a learning for us. But at the same time, I know, look, we compete with them and others, and we also know what happens in the market in terms of prices. So it's not like I can be like, they're working in their own universe. They're not. There is a competitive playing field over there that happens. So, I don't have the exact answer for you, but I think there is learnings for us to keep working on quarter on quarter that we're trying to do step by step. I think you had one more question. You can ask that. I don't think I answered your question very well, but you have one more question.
And Aditya, the second question was regarding Pontech, and I don't know whether this is the right forum, but obviously Pontech will most probably be merged with our company. So the results for Pontech also seemed a little underwhelming. So can you comment on a little bit? I'm just asking because as a shareholder of welding, we should equally be asking about Pontech.
Fair enough. I won't get too much into Pontech. I think we'll divert a little bit over here. It has to do a bit with the product mix, basically, in essence. So you will see that product mix improve. It has a lot to do with product mix. Essentially, there are 3 or 4 main product groups that are there, and the services part of it. And Q2 was a bit too soft. I think all of us know that. And you will see some improvement definitely happen going forward.
Okay. Thank you so much. And
it was a bit of an anomaly quarter for them. So don't.
Okay. So this was one off in your view for Fontech.
I think it wasn't in the right path of where it should be. So let's put it that way. And definitely you should see improvements there. It's not like that's the new normal at all. No.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next speaker for the day is Mr. Deepak Tewari. Mr. Deepak, you are now being placed in the meeting. Please proceed to ask your questions.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Sorry to repeat, maybe sounding repetitive, but as everybody was alluding to the margins basically. So just wanted to know, and you also have reiterated that definitely there is a scope for improvement. So just wanted to know, what are the levers basically apart from the product mix? Are there any levers that you can talk about or give some color that how the margins we are expecting to improve from here? So that would be my first question.
Product mix is such a significant part of it, and the way we sell the right products across the spectrum is a very big part of that. I think increasing our share of business in Adore International is very important towards that as well. We had certain product lines that were going very slow for a few months that have now picked up, which should show encouraging margins also. I think it's just that. I think it's literally just basically simple like that. And I think structuring our sales team to be more geared towards selling higher value sort of products that are in our range, which is needing to push that a little bit. And that's a learning. It doesn't happen just because I say so. It doesn't happen just because you put a policy in place. It's a learning factor that needs to go into that as well. So you will see it. You will see it. We track it very, 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 very regularly, and you will see it improve. Sorry, you have something else you wanted to ask on that?
Yeah. Just wanted to know, what is the current capacity utilization, current capacity?
So it varies anywhere from certain, in the consumable side, it varies anywhere from approximately 65% to on the commoditized range as close as 90-92%. As far as the consumer equipment is concerned, we are probably somewhere in the 70s. 70 now with what we're seeing, so good demand. Yeah, say somewhere in the 70s, high 70s in that regard as far as the equipment is concerned.
And just last one bookkeeping question, that obviously you talked about raw material variation, but I was seeing a line item that operating and manufacturing expenses, that item is actually growing by almost like 30-35% on a quarter-quarter or even first half basis. So what exactly
The problem is, if you ask, from what most of it is you're comparing it against a very dull, quiet, lockdown type period last HY1, right? So you obviously have more expenses that are starting to pick up in regard to that. That's one. Second is last HY1, last year, we never had freight included. So now we do inclusion of freight. So we have to adjust that cost accordingly. So it happens on both sides, on the top and the bottom accordingly. So that's why there's a certain impact over there.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Mr. Pritesh Cheda. Mr. Pritesh, you are now being placed in the meeting. Please ask your question.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, so one question on one feedback that you gave on the volumes. I'm trying to connect that question with, past calls. So, you've always mentioned that the demand scenario for your product line is far better than what you would have ever seen in the last 8-10 years. The last cycle that you saw was about 10 years back. I was just perplexed then, why is the volume flat? And do you see the demand scenario panning out as of now, just what you saw in the last cycle? So are there any changes to that observation?
No, there are no major changes to that observation. What has changed is I see the product mix as far as it goes, the demand, the volume has increased. So approximately, if you look at it, HY1, I don't know which period you want to look at, but let's look at
H1 to H1
in terms of the right product mix of what we want to sell, it will be probably somewhere in the region of 5-6% growth in terms of the volumes of the right products that we want to do. Certain key products, certain commoditized range, we've had a slight dip that has happened. And that's also going to happen in Q1. simply speaking, Q1 was, it was very, very, very slow in that regard. So the volumes were very slow and you had inflationary demand that just took care of everything from that angle. So that's going to happen. So I think if you have to keep Q1 sort of very aside, yes, July very aside, and you have to look at August and September onwards as more indicators of what is happening, I tend to feel that that is on the right path.
So let's say last year you had close to 20%, more than 20% volume growth. We were at about 50,000 tons last year. What kind of volumes do you see happening this year, or volume growth that do you see happening this year? See, I'm just coming back from a normal thing. If I even look at the e-way bill or any other volume growth metrics in a country like India, a lot of it is double-digit volume growth. So I was a little bit more confused. Is it for the industry that it has not grown? It is specific to you. How should we read it?
I see it as fairly industry oriented in that regard. And I think that if you look at it, I think if you look at HY2 versus HY2, we should be in a position to at least do somewhere in the region of 10 to 15% volume growth in that regard.
Okay. Any inventory, RM inventory, large RM inventory that you're carrying, which
where, no concerns.
Okay.
We consciously took the margin hit to clear that through. So that's what the plan was. I don't know if it works or not, but that's what we tried. So
H2 basically starts on a much better slate with better volumes, which can bring you leverage.
Yeah.
And the RM pricing hit, which you would have taken in the first 3-4 months or 5 months, you would head towards a slightly softer RM scenario, which would be good for margins. That's how we should read it, right? As of now.
Yes. Okay.
And the last thing on the project business that you have taken off, the project that you have taken off, 134 crores of ONGC, there, what is the execution cycle? If you could break up you said it's 30 months, but we would like to know what will flow in 23, what flows in 24, and what flows in 25, and how will the margin progression be in 23, 24, 25 for that particular project. And when you execute that project, does it mean that will it be over and above the usual business that you're doing in the fly ash business, or this will be additional?
Okay, so we started the order, we just started getting some work in Q4, you will recognize a little bit of revenue. So I'm going to talk in broad percentage terms, Ritesh. I'm not going to go into exactly what percentage we're going to do. I would expect somewhere in the region of approximately 10 to 15% of revenue to be incurred in Q4 of the project. That's mainly related to design, engineering, things like that. And that will obviously help us to move closer to the normal in terms of our margins. The all of next year, FY24, is where you should see 55-60% of the balance of the revenue take place. And those margins are being built in so that they do improve versus what the margins you're seeing right now. Like I said, that should pick up 200 basis points, 300 basis points at the very minimum is what we're looking at as we go over there. And the balance hangover will be pushed into FY25. Yeah, I think more in the first half of the year especially. And a little bit maybe in Q3. So that's the way we're looking at it. We're tracking it very closely. The other question you had is that a one-off? One is that gives us, because of the type of order we've taken, it gives us a lot of interesting opportunities in terms of that technology, which is why we're pushing that a bit hard. I wouldn't say that we're not taking more business. We do take more business. We bid for more projects. But then three criteria, like I've said, various calls that matter now. The amount of engineering value addition we're putting in, the amount of the kind of margins, the kind of working capital, as well as the client base that we're working with. And there seems to be quite robust demand for that. So we take on a few orders. We are doing it, but we're also very particular to ensure that this job is executed correctly. It's part of a life cycle, of a learning cycle, that we must do these large jobs very correctly. So it's a mix. We look at it going, okay, we've got this order. What can we take? What can we not take? And accordingly, we build up from there.
And what margin this project do you think has been bid at?
I'm not going to give you an exact number, but it's definitely healthier than the margins you've seen in this business for a long time. That's all.
Okay. And working capital cycle?
Working capital cycle should definitely improve. No, I think we went through that.
For, for this particular project, what is the working capital cycle? Will you need capital?
We will need some capital. We will definitely need some capital for sure.
Yes, we will.
We've got a max exposure over time will be in the region of 30, 35, right?
35
is what the math was. We have done a max exposure at any point in time of approximately
35
crores.
We have the progressive payment which will come.
And then you have your progressive payments and all of that. So we have to show, obviously, we've studied all of that. And like I said, I'm ballpark trying to remember, it's about 35 was the max exposure at any point in time.
Okay, one thing you didn't answer is this business, this project will be addition to what existing base business that you have?
Yeah.
You have this will be additional, right? So you do a certain number in flares.
Yeah.
Let me just pull that number. So you do about annually, 30-40 crores of business you do. This will be additional, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. All the best to you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Our next speaker for today is Mr. Chandresh Malpani. Mr. Chandresh, you are now being placed in the meeting. Please proceed to ask your questions.
Yeah, hi, good evening, sir.
Hi.
Yeah, so sir, firstly, on the flare side, as you mentioned that this ONGC project will start booking revenue from the Q4 10%. Sir, in the Q4, you mentioned that the target revenue is 50 crore. So are we in line to achieve that in this year? 50 crore was the mentioned in the investor presentation.
For the year, the sales for the year will be, yes, we're on track for that.
And secondly, sir, since this is a very big project for you, so sir, how are we covered on the commodity prices so that we don't take a margin hit?
We've been working quite extensively on that. The sourcing team, the engineering team have been doing a lot of work on that. And so far, we've already started placing orders, in fact, for the bulk of the raw materials. And we remain within the limits at the moment. I think we're placing orders for almost a very large percentage of the raw materials at the moment. Mm-hmm. We're still issuing purchase orders accordingly. So, data I saw last, we should be within quite a comfortable parameter on our budget. So, we're not yet, we have no concern, no red flag at the moment.
So, we have any escalation clause for the same in covered?
I don't think we have any escalation clause covered, but I think that's okay at the moment. We study all of that and it should be okay right now.
Okay. And next thing is, sir, since in the AGM, we seen that the rupee is depreciating against the dollar. So it was mentioned that equipment side, we will see some traction because import getting higher price. And since we are the largest manufacturer of equipments, have we seen any benefit out of the same?
Not seeing a little bit of benefit out of it. But, you know, supply chains from the rest of the world have also opened up quite quickly. So I think that is very short-lived. But having said that, I still believe that today we do get a lot of business by virtue of our improved supply chain, Make in India, all of that. So I think it's hard for me to quantify, but it definitely is in existence. Sorry, Mr. Malpani, anything else you want to ask?
Hello. Yeah, last thing on the export number, if you can brief, what was the export revenue we are deriving?
I've shown it in a slide earlier. I think we had last year done approximately 30 crores in exports, and this year we're on track to close somewhere in the region of approximately 50 to 60% growth on that.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Ms. Nitiksha Shah. Ms. Shah, you are now being placed in the meeting. Please ask your questions.
Hello.
Yeah.
Am I audible?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Actually, I had a question regarding the demand scenario in this situation, which a lot of discussion has happened. But just to add to it, I would like to know whether which sector do we have the, you know, a very strong demand from, like infrastructure, oil and gas. So can you just identify in the, you know, in priority wise that which sector which we will get the demand for? And the other thing is, when we have projects, so is there in the project specified the name of the company from which these consumables have to be sourced, or is it through, you know, distributors, or how does that work?
So, heavy engineering contributes approximately 30-odd% of our sales, automotive at approximately 20%, construction, which I consider part of heavy engineering, and general infra as a full mix is another 10-11%.
Railways is about 8 to 10% and growing a little bit from that. So I hope that helps answer a few questions on that. We do most of our sales, approximately 65% of our sales happen through the distribution network of approximately 200 distributors. And the balance 30 to 35% would happen through direct sales, some large parties, some medium-sized parties, depends on how it's structured. Some could be rate contract-oriented, some could be direct sales negotiated at that time, some could be a tender-based process, all of those different things. So that covers most of it. Anything else, ma'am? Anything else?
Hello, yeah. And demand from which sector particularly you see that it's a very strong demand from, you know, from a couple of sectors. So which would that be?
I think like I said, I keep categorizing under general infra, heavy engineering and railways. I'm seeing those sectors throwing a lot more traction at the moment.
Okay. Thank you. That's all from my side.
Thank you.
Our next speaker for today is Mr. Nikhil Jain. Mr. Nikhil, you are now being invited to the meeting. Please ask your question.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Just a couple of questions. I just wanted to know, let's say, what is the timeline for completing the merger with Adobe Fontech, part one. And second is that, is there any, let's say, difficulty or delays do you anticipate at this point of time in that merger going through, given that there were certain opposition that came in and all?
So it will take about a year or so for sure from now on. And if it happens before that, we'll be lucky. Because that's the way NCLT is running, unfortunately, as of now.
As far as your question regarding any issues with minority shareholders, especially at the context side, I don't think so. I don't know. I can't comment. I think most of them will see rationale in why we're doing this and also value appreciation in why we're doing it. So I think as and when the time comes, we'll see at that time. But I'm fairly confident that you have a few significant minority shareholders who understand the long-term proposition of what we're proposing.
Okay. And my second question was about the international business. So we are saying that our exports will increase this year also as compared to last year. So what is it that we are actually exporting? Is it like basically the projects or the consumable part of it?
Welding consumables and welding equipment. We also are undertaking a few, have in the past done flares and all of that, and we will always do that a little bit because there is some interesting engineering work there. However, what I'm talking about is pure play welding business on the welding consumables and welding equipment.
Okay. And just a final question maybe. So I just wanted to understand what in your view is, let's say, a good margin profile for both the businesses, let's say the consumable as well as the project and flares business. So
I'd say each one of these verticals has anywhere between 150 to 300 basis points upwards, which will automatically lead to the company having that much and whereas the scale coming in. I think that's the right path.
And that should possibly be achievable over the next, let's say, 2 to 3 years.
Should happen for sure. If you ask me, it should happen. And I think that if we don't do it, then there's a failure on our part in some way.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Our next speaker for today is Mr. Ravi Purohit. Mr. Purohit, you are now being placed in the meeting. Please ask your question. Mr. Ravi Purohit?
Come back.
Our next speaker for today is Mr. Dhwanil Desai. Mr. Desai, you are now being placed in the meeting. Please ask your question.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Aditya. So most of the questions have been asked and answered. Just two questions. The first one is on the project business. So, you know, we went through a tough phase on the project business side. And our intention was to go to the 75 crore kind of an order book, and then we came across a very large order and took it. So going forward, how do you think about this business? I mean, do you want to cap this business at certain percentage of our overall revenue in terms of risk mitigation measure? How do you guys think about it?
So I don't think we look at it from a, I think that's a good question, because if you look at the history of what we've come out of and where we're going towards, and the opportunity is changing very fast in front of us, which is why we decided to take on this order. So I think the things we look at is the exposure that the company is going to take on. First is the engineering capability and value addition the company provides to the order, because at the end of the day, that translates into value for the company. So what are we doing in that regard? And that's what the team's been built up to do, and they're doing a very good job of evaluating that. So one is that. Then you go into, what are my financial metrics that are being taken care of? All the way from my exposures till, you know, what will be the margins on it? All of that have to be looked at, and the board is, of course, because of what's happened, the board is very particular about all of, looking at all of those things. So we have to go through a little bit of that. I think this, if we can do a few of these orders correctly at this platform, at this level, then I think the upside is quite significant in terms of structuring it correctly. But it's a continuously evolving process. Over the next 6 months, I'll keep learning more. 9 months, we'll keep learning more and see our execution, our capability, our ability to hit the budgets that we planned for. You know, a lot of that has to happen. So I think it's a very good learning from that perspective. And look, when Flares seems to be having a decent opportunity right now, and that's where our engineering knowledge lies, why not try it? Versus, you know, when 2 years ago, when we got into this mess, when we were cleaning up a mess, the opportunity was not really sitting in front of us. It was a question of clean up a mess and then see step by step how do you build up the blocks. So I think that sort of has arisen now, and we should be reactive to it quite quickly. So that's where we are.
So I think, just to take it forward. So, I mean, the reason I'm asking this question is that inherently our consumable business is a very capital efficient business, right? I mean, it generates very high ROCs. Yeah. Vis-a-vis that, what we are trying to do in Flare at best can give you 15-18% ROC. I mean, those are the typical EPC ROCs that you get in any company. So in terms of allocating capital, don't you think that we need to be mindful of a point beyond which you don't want to allocate capital to a project business?
Definitely. But I don't think we've, at least I have not in the last 2 years, come in a situation of either or. So, but definitely if that situation does arise and the exposure limits were getting a bit high, I would definitely look at it from that perspective. But we are nowhere near that. And if you see from 2 years ago, September 2020 till today, September 2020, we were 120 crores of utilization. Oh, no, not September. By Jan, we went to 120. Jan 21, yeah. We were 120 crores of utilization.
77 and put together
150. And we are now down to approximately 18 crores on fund-based utilization. With a much higher scale on that regard. So we're balancing all of that. And I don't think the situation has arisen yet, but it's, as and when it does, of course, where is more efficient is where we will be looking at.
Okay. And one question on the export side. So, you know, we are doing well on export side. And if I remember our earlier conversation, the final goalpost or at least intermittent goalpost was 100 crore at some point in time and primarily driven by Middle East. So if you can give some updates in terms of on the business side, what have we done in terms of distribution setup, in terms of warehousing, in terms of which competition, whom we will be competing with and taking market share from, some color on that.
Yeah, sure. So the first thing we did is we rejigged the business team over there and got in a more capable team who has a lot more international business exposure and has worked in the area and done all of that. So we've done that. We've got a few building blocks in that regard. The second thing we did is decided to identify the key pockets and what was going wrong in those. So we first looked at the UAE and they've done a lot of work over there to increase the business. We're right now looking at, I was just going over the numbers, we're almost looking at 100% plus growth in those markets, in that market, which is a key market for us already. We're looking at that already happening. The second thing is distributors. Markets we are in, but ineffective sales altogether. So like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and a few others where we've been weak. So Mustafa and his team have been very good at picking out those things and going after them, and we're building it up. Now you have to rebuild it. So a lot of people know the brand, or have a good impression of the brand, but may have had a bad experience. Or people know the brand, but haven't had them, the product's not yet qualified. So you have to go through that entire cycle, and it takes a little bit of time. The other good advantage that we're having right now is, like I said, the parity between us and China reduced to that effect. So you're looking at India as a fairly serious supply chain coming into those markets. And And the third thing is, you know, you have to do the value addition sale and everything like that. I don't think we're taking market share. I think market share is still tiny, but we do compete with the tier one and tier two guys as global MNCs. And that's where our brand is placed, which is very fortunate. So that's what we're working at all the time. We're actually looking at certain other markets as well. We just picked up something out of Brazil. So like that, we're looking at things much more broad-based with the logical flow to everything. And I'm very happy in the direction the team's going at the moment. And I think that 100 crore figure is something that they have to work towards by FY25. They should be in a position to do it. They have to push hard to do it, but I think it's definitely feasible to do.
Great. Thanks a lot, Aditya. All the best.
Thanks.
Our next speaker for today is Mr. Milind Varkar. Mr. Varkar, you are now being placed in the meeting. Please ask your question. Our next speaker for today is Mr. Vijay Karpe. Mr. Karpe, you are now being placed in the meeting. Please ask your question.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Aditya, two questions. One, what is our current consumables capacity and what is our vacuum treatment capacity? The last number which I had for consumables, it was 70,000 tons, I guess. And for welding equipment, it was 24,000 units. So what was it at the end of FY22?
Sorry, just say the last part again. What is your...
Welding equipment capacity, it was 24,000.
So approximately for welding consumables, you'd be in the region of 80,000. 80,000 metric tons. See, it again depends on product mix, which is why we're debating it like that. But I'll tell you, it's basically around 80,000 is what you're looking at from that regard. That's why I say some product lines were at 60, 65%, somewhere at 80, 85% to 90% utilization. So it's very hard to give you a defined number and say this is it. On the equipment front, again, it's a mix related thing. But we should be in the region, like I said, the 70s, somewhere in the 70s as far as capacity utilization is concerned.
Okay, so I'm considering the consumables capacity to be 80,000 and the last number for equipments I have 24. So can I consider it to be the same at 24,000 then?
Yeah, that should be fine. I'm not going to like reconfirm those numbers as exact because there is some variation that's open there. But you're fairly, for ballpark estimations, fairly fine. Yeah.
Okay. So and post this expansion, what will?
I think 80,000. I'm sorry. I'm going to stop you here. 80,000 seems a bit higher actually than what I'm comfortable discussing on the call. So I'd say a little bit lower than that. Definitely. Yeah. Closer to the 70 mark. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. So post this expansion, what will this take our consumables capacity and our welding capacity then?
We are enhancing our consumables capacity at the moment for a few product lines.
Yeah, so the 70 will go to what in 23?
For that specific product line, we're adding another. And the other product line, if you piece them together, you're adding somewhere in the region of 4,000-5,000. But these are again very product line specific, right? So if you look at that product line, that product line specifically is growing at way above 20-25%. But as the overall basket is concerned, you'll only get 5-6% capacity growth. So you have to keep that in mind. That's all. That's okay. Can you hear me? That's fine. Hello? Hello?
Yeah, my second, yeah. So I lost you a bit in between, but I got the answer. The second question is with regards to the margins, again, comparing them with ISEB. I got the point when you said that they also have a part of services income embedded in their income. So that is fine, but if you look at the other numbers, for them, the traded goods in terms of their income, it is somewhere close to 30%, and for us, it is... the traded sales goods number is very low. So if you look at their margin, which is somewhere close to 15%, and for us they are somewhere close to 11.5%, then if you look to practically look at it, the margin gap is actually higher, right, for us,
as we
have a lower traded goods sales.
And that has a lot to do with global sourcing. I think that you know, they look at certain countries for global sourcing, especially in the welding equipment front. Like I said, we manufacture last year about 12,000 equipments. This year we manufacture anywhere close to 16,000 equipments, or you know, 15 to 16,000 equipments. The key thing, product range matters a bit, but and I believe most of our competitors import them. So I won't go into their details, but definitely on the traded items that will happen. But there are certain other advantages that will come over the long term that we got to play out and work with, and I think you'll see that. But look, when you're a global MNC, $2-2.5 billion, your supply chains work very differently to, you know, 800 crore companies. So they also have supplies to group companies. Now, like I said, I don't like to comment too much on their numbers, but I keep looking at it because it's a learning for us to understand where we are going wrong. And I can't comment on them, but I feel like this is certain areas that we can keep improving on a little bit as we go.
Price realization improvement, or is it the product mix improvement, or is it cost cutting?
It's a margin on the product that is higher through trading.
So lastly,
due to global sourcing benefit, huh? That's what I feel.
Yeah, and last question from my side. So, what are the this merger is finally going through, right, for Edor, Fontec, and Welding?
It's gone to NCLT, you know, so they have to follow their process. So, the processes are on.
Okay, got it. Thank you so much, and best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker for the day is Mr. Milind Varkar. Mr. Varkar, you are now being placed in the meeting. Please ask your question.
Yeah, good evening, sir. My question is again on the demand side. I understand the Q1 there was a volume growth, Q2 it was more flattish. So still we have a guidance of 10-15% volume growth on the H2. So what are the basically the levers or the ground situation which you feel that from a flattish growth in Q2, the Q3 and Q4, there will be a high volume growth?
Just demand indicators seem to indicate that there is a better growth opportunity that is coming. That's one. Secondly, like I keep saying, if you saw that presentation in which we showed you how commodity prices went up, it was bound to, you know, sort of stifle demand in supply chains and stuff like that. So I think that had an impact for sure. We look at steel consumption data, we talk to, you know, steel mills, we talk to a few of those things, and I think it seems to be fairly robust in that regard. But like I keep saying, I can't look beyond 3-5 months. You can look at the long-term story, you look at everything intact, you understand all the economic, macroeconomic pillars are intact, this is what should be happening. But there are certain shocks. They might be small in nature, they might be short-lived in nature, but there are certain shocks you have to live with. Having said that, right now I feel the demand scenario is fairly good going forward.
So, if I can ask on the same, that what difference did actually happen on the ground, that there was a volume flattish growth in Q2 compared to Q1? Or the H2 guidance is more also considering the
data. Our Q2 volume growth is significant compared to Q1. I think there's some misunderstanding on the data. Q2 of this year has been significant volume growth versus Q1 of this year.
Okay. Clear. That's it from my side.
Thank you. Our next speaker for the day is Mr. Ravi Purohit. Mr. Purohit, you are placed in the meeting. Please ask your question.
This is an Indotech question. No, we can't hear you, Mr. Purohit, but I think there's some message that comes regarding Indotech. Indotech is a partnership we have just signed on with for our welding and cutting automation division. I think they're a company based out of Scandinavia. And it's just very early days still. We're just looking at different opportunities to work together in how we can give better solutions, better engineered solutions for our automation division. Still very early days. That's it. Anyone else?
Our last speaker for today is Mr. Amit Anwari. Mr. Anwari, you are now being placed in the meeting. Please ask your question.
Hi, this is Amit Anwari. Thanks, Aditya. Thanks for taking my question. My question is, you know, with respect to the projects business, you know, in the past, we have already faced challenges in the projects business, and it took some good amount of time to clean up the books. Just wanted to understand more color on this 145 crore projects business. You already mentioned about, you know, being more design engineering element and slightly better margin than the history. So some more color on the customer and what exactly is the nature of this project. And number two, how is our risk assessment strategy with respect to the projects business? And lastly, what exactly is our strategy, you know, with respect to the business mix and how the projects will look like in going forward in the business mix?
Sure. So the project is actually part of ONGC's Uran project, which is not too far from Bombay, within Bombay, greater Bombay limits on the way to Pune and stuff like that, Uran. So it's fairly close by. In fact, the project that you're referring to, where we had a certain error, was the project you're referring to, which we had to go through the entire cleanup, was limited engineering and also being done abroad. So I think there were too many issues that went into that entire thing, but let's leave that in the past. Here there's a lot of engineering work where we do the flares, the demountable flares. These are flares that have to be erected on a very large structure. And again, I'm not a technical person, so I can't go into too much detail on all of that. But I will tell you that basically there are some repairs, some that have to be taken off and some new things that have to be added on in terms of the entire flare structure. So there's a lot of work being done over there in that regard. And it's a fairly sizable and very important project. We've got a lot more cross-functional teams handling it, and we're trying to learn from the past mistakes to handle this, and it's being monitored more effectively. The other thing we've done is we put an internal audit team to track the project to see if we're hitting our certain metrics, if we're getting everything on track. So I think there's a lot more comfort, because same doubts you have internally are always there, that this is going to be another black hole in some way or form. And we're spending a lot of time and effort to ensure that doesn't happen. A lot of tracking and metrics, and I'm very confident the team, Ajay and the rest of his team are on the right path as far as putting this in place. So I think that will definitely improve. I think we should be able in a position to execute as well. But it's still early days. So and it's part of, look, an organization. This is a learning. Flares has been in our DNA for 30 years, I think. So it's just that we unfortunately had a very bad episode in the project engineering business that sort of made us forget that we were good at that. So we're going back to just ensuring that DNA is in place and how we can keep building on that going forward. I hope that answers. I think you had one more point. I'm blanking out. Did you have anything else?
So just wanted to understand, you know, the strategy on project. Is it fitting in our long-term strategy?
It fits into our long-term, and also the general economic environment is good for it. We're going to focus on flares. First, we're going to focus where we add engineering value. That's number one. Where we add engineering value is in flares and process equipment. That's our capability. So it's very geared, whether it's sales, operations, or the management team, all geared just towards these product lines and identifying where do we add value in the fabrication and the design and engineering of these product lines. So that's where it is, and it fits into our long-term strategy for sure.
Great. And we used to talk about, I'm forgetting that there's some dental technology we talked about 6 months back and some investment in that.
That's in Arrow Fontech. So that's a separate thing. It's in Arrow Fontech. And that is, yeah. That's
okay. Not. Thank you. Thanks. Yeah.
No problem.
Okay. We have a follow-up question from Mr. Jason.
Yeah.
Mr. Jason, you are now placed in the meeting. Please ask your question.
Yeah, so thanks for taking my follow-up question. An earlier participant did ask for this, for the margins on this Uran, the big project you have. Now, you said that probably you can take it, you know, as a base margin, but actually in the projects business, there have been losses earlier. So just if you could just give some color on what exact, I mean, a ballpark number for margins, if possible, just wanted to. Just a ballpark number.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to figure out how to answer your question. That's all. I think someone had indicated, look, you have to look at peers in the process equipment and heavy fabrication industry and sort of look at that. I think that would be a fair. I don't want to give you guys a number, and I'm hesitating from giving you a number for my own reasons, but it's significantly better than what you've seen in our track record. But if you and you can also compare it to people who are in a similar sort of heavy engineering fabrication kind of space.
Okay, sure. Thanks for that. And so I just wanted to understand that, I mean, you set up this, so basically you're going strong on the Adore international front.
Yeah.
And our exports are at 5% in FY22, I'm talking about. And you're saying that there's a strong growth in FY23 as well. So just wanted to know, I mean, you set up a facility in the UAE as well right now.
Yeah.
Now, but what I understand is consumables is more of a localized business. So if it's more of a localized business, then just wanted to know what are our strengths in those, that perspective. If
it's not a very localized business. In fact, like the East Asian markets are playing a lot of supply chain into these markets as well. So it's not a very localized business.
Oh, okay.
It depends on, again, if you're dealing in a very, very commoditized range, then you don't have excess shipping costs cannot be borne, right? So if you're selling it halfway across the world and it's a very commoditized range, of course, that has an impact as well.
Right. But
in the markets in which we operate, first of all, the localized manufacturing is limited.
Yes.
Secondly, our brand is fairly strong.
Yes.
So, no, I think it's fairly good. And thirdly, like I keep saying, look, globally, things have changed a bit, right, in terms of supply chains. So I think there's opportunities why it's very strong for us. Yeah.
Okay, so we have a manufacturing facility right there in the UAE?
No,
right?
All out of here.
Okay, but so we'll be playing the plus one and the tailwinds basically. Yeah,
but as you grow the business, you can always explore more and more opportunities. The first is to get the base effect up to a larger number, right? So to get up to that, where it should be 10 to 12% of your sales, not 5, get up 10, 12%, 15%, and then you can keep exploring different opportunities there, Alan. See how to take it.
Okay. And so I just didn't catch this. Adore Fontech merger will get over by the end of this financial year. Is that right?
Look, it's an NCLT thing. So we're all playing guesstimates over here. So we're all hoping it'll happen. But I think the indicators are no, it'll drag a little beyond that.
Okay. And so my just one final question. I mean, an earlier participant did ask this. Consumables total capacity of 80,000 metric tons, a little lower, you mentioned. But
a little bit lower.
But with this capacity expansion, where can it go to? I mean, is there a number where you can put it at in terms of metric tons?
Well, I think right now, I'd say anywhere in the region of 75 to 85,000 metric tons is what the plan is, and a few things that we need to add on to that. And then later on, we'll take that forward more as we need to. And I'll probably definitely have another call before I'm in a position to do that. So,
and equipment is at 24,000 metric tons. That's what you said. Yeah. Okay.
Volume.
Okay, sure, sir. Thanks for this. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This is all for today's Q&A session. Over to Aditya.
All right, we're done, right? Okay, thank you. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your participation and taking all the time. We'll try to keep some kind of meeting.
Yeah, I think once every 6 months is what we plan right now, and then we'll do the recording. But thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, everybody.